Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners tuning in from 165 countries around the world, about a million listens a month. And today, I hope everyone is tuning into Tech Bites, the weekly show where we look at the intersection of food and technology. And today is episode 252. It is our last episode of the year 2021. And as our tradition is at Tech Bites, since we started way back in 2015, our last show of the year is always a look forward to the next year. We're lucky in the food tech space in that many of the innovators and CEOs and founders and people that we talk to, their companies are good indicators of what their industry and what we will be looking at and thinking about. People who innovate have to be one or two or 12 steps ahead of everyone else in order to really hit that point and hit that mark. So today I'm really happy to welcome a great group of women in tech today. First up, we have Dr. Jasmine Hume, who is the CEO and founder of a company called Shiru. And Shiru is an interesting one. We've talked a lot about plant-based, lab-grown, animal protein alternatives on this show. We've talked a lot about it this year and in years past. It is certainly a trend that people are reading about, that they're seeing in the grocery stores and in some of their favorite restaurants. But maybe, you know, people haven't stopped to think about what goes into all those things in the same way if you were standing in the supermarket aisle with a list of ingredients to make your favorite meatloaf recipe. If you wanted to do a plant-based version of that, you'd have to find plant-based versions of everything. And that's where Shiru steps in. It's a very interesting idea. It's a company that is going to support other companies in their food production by providing very unique ingredients. So Jasmine, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
And then joining us also are two of her members of her board. We have Dina Shakir, who is partner of Lux Capital. Dina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And Mary Clark, who is Senior VP at Firmenich, who is also a new board member at Shiru.
Thanks, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here.
Very exciting to hear about everyone's point of view and thoughts for the new year. But let's start with Jasmine, and let's start with Shiru. Shiru, Jasmine, tell us a little bit about the story. You've been in business for a little bit, but this year is going to be a big year for you and a big year for the company. 2022 is when you really dig in and start making the donuts, as it were.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. So just giving a little bit of background on Shiru, we see ourselves as a next generation ingredients company. There are undeniable trends that are happening right now globally. We obviously have a growing global population. We also have a climate that is under extreme stress. A lot of that is contributed to by the way that we make food, essentially, particularly looking at some of the more unsustainable practices around animal agriculture. And we're also seeing this big shift in terms of what people are looking for food solutions, which is really driven by consumers. That is really grounded in a huge growing movement around plant-based foods. So the opportunities are tremendous to be able to make foods that are more sustainable, better for the environment, better for people, and better for animals. Unfortunately, some of the basic ingredients that we need to make these foods really tasty and have all the right textures, nutritional properties, and flavors sometimes really just don't meet the mark yet. And so at Shiru, we are developing a portfolio of functional ingredients that are protein-based to be able to really create these foods that are going to fuel the future sustainably. So thinking about providing technical ingredient solutions that can enable plant-based or vegan cheese that doesn't rely on dairy proteins, that has still all of the same amazing qualities that we know dairy cheeses to have, things like melting and stretching, providing different flavor profiles, being aged in certain ways. It all comes down to the magic of protein ingredients. But today, a lot of the food formulators don't actually have access to the ingredients that are actually going to unlock those capabilities for the entire market. So that's where Shiru comes in.
So anyone who, and you know, tell me if this is a good analogy, Jasmine, anybody who's taken a recipe and tried to convert that recipe to being maybe vegan or vegetarian or gluten-free or, you know, any number of the different nutritional profiles that people are wanting these days, both out of, you know, philosophical reasons or medical reasons. You know, you start to drill through the ingredient list of, you know, a cookie or bread or, you know, your favorite chicken dish. All of those things would have to align under vegan or under gluten-free or under whatever your category is. So is that essentially, you know, in a general term, what Shiru is doing? Shiru is providing the basic ingredients to make these other final products?
Yes, essentially we are providing the ingredients that enable really, you know, the food formulators and specifically for Shiru, we're actually providing solutions to the food industry. So our customers are in fact food manufacturers rather than, you know, me if I go to the grocery store per se. And so you can think about it as being, you know, opportunities like replacing eggs or gelatin or dairy proteins from a food formulation where all of those ingredients are used because they perform a function. And it might be providing texture or emulsifying or stabilizing a food. And at Shiru, we provide ingredient solutions that are basically enabling that same function. So if you remove egg from the recipe, what other protein has the ability to emulsify? And there are a huge number of plant proteins out there that really haven't been explored for a lot of these food functionalities. At Shiru in-house, we actually have a database of more than 450 million natural proteins.
450 million.
That's right. Yes.
450 million natural proteins.
Natural proteins. Yes.
I could probably,
exactly.
I mean, I would be hard pressed to name 400, I think. Or maybe I could. I don't know. That seems like a staggering number.
It is. It is, Jennifer. We think so. And it's, our database is ever growing. But you're not alone. So, you know, the truth is that we get 90% of our calories from just 13 staple crops today. And
okay.
Those are,
okay.
You know,
so I'm not
the
crazy in thinking
crops.
that trying to name 400 would be a challenge.
No, that is a challenge, for sure. That's a challenge. but really, you know, what we do is we're essentially growing the toolbox of ingredients from which food manufacturers have to be able to meet the demands of the consumers for foods that are more sustainable, provide the same nutrition, and are equally as tasty.
So you have been basically proving concept, making different products and things like that. And now you are getting ready to ramp up and start producing at scale.
That's right. We are on the cusp of that. And so we have really been heads down in terms of, you know, identifying of that large database we have, what are the best protein ingredients that we can bring to the market first? And so towards that end, we have a small but growing ingredients catalog that we've developed at Shiru. And now in the next year, we're really excited to build out capabilities that are more related to growing our product. And so taking those initial discoveries that were kind of at bench scale in the lab, moving into producing them at pilot scale. So producing larger sample quantities to be able to deliver them to our early customers. And these are, you know, big or small, but global food CPG companies around the world who essentially in the next year, we're going to start providing our first tangible samples of our ingredients to them for them to be able to test and start to formulate with, which is a new phase of development for us. Very exciting.
So CPG is consumer packaged goods.
Exactly right. Yes.
So that means big companies that make the big boxes of, you know, cereal and salad dressing and all those things that we see in the supermarket aisle or in our virtual place online where we do our shopping today. So tell us, Jasmine, what do you see just in terms of trend wise? What are the types of foods and products that are going to be online for 2022 and coming that you are trying to address?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I talked a little bit about plant-based, and mm-hmm. I think, you know, all of us, we probably can't turn a corner or go to the grocery store, certainly, without seeing a whole lot of new development in the plant-based sector. That is not slowing down, which is really exciting. So I think some of the major categories there that we're really excited to support and provide solutions for are one, plant-based meat. So that could be everything from, plant-based burgers to breakfast sausage patties to meatballs, chicken nuggets, you name it. And then the other one, which is also growing at a really, really exciting pace, but in our opinion, may need some help in terms of the need for functional ingredients, is actually alternatives to dairy. So specifically, you know, you look at plant-based yogurts or plant-based cheeses, and there's some work to do. There are some really great companies that are developing products in this space, but it's technically very challenging to match like this, you know, very viscous Greek yogurt profile that you put your spoon in and it kind of like leaves a dent in the cup. That's difficult to achieve with plant proteins. And so at Shiru, we're really excited to provide solutions for the things that are most challenging, but also growing at a really, really high rate right now.
Mm-hmm. So plant-based meat substitutes across the board and then plant-based dairy across the board.
Yes.
Mary, you are in a similar business in terms of providing flavor and taste and perfume to, you know, the world at large. You're not a textural company, but you're definitely a taste company. What are you seeing from where you sit in terms of what the general trends are for 2022?
Well, I agree entirely with Jasmine in that absolutely there's a continued shift toward plant-centered diets, both on menus and restaurants as well as store shelves. And we see this across dairy and meat categories. If you look at the consumer, over 60% of consumers in developed markets are intentionally looking to include plant proteins in their diets. Right now, about 10% of launches in dairy and 8% of launches in meat categories are based on alternative proteins. And we expect that to continue to grow throughout 2022. What we'll start to see is addressing the particular challenge that is seen with plant proteins. And that is a challenge with developing products that are great tasting. Many of the traditional legume-based, nutritional proteins have off notes. So looking ahead, expect to see products that have improved taste profiles. And as Jasmine referred to, we'll have a more authentic experience replicating what consumers have come to expect from dairy and meat. And finally, we'll eventually start to see some more variety, both in types of proteins, as a base nutritional protein. For example, oat is growing, but there's a lot of other proteins, including functional proteins. We'll also start to see novelty in finished product format, because after all, there's only so much room in our menus for burgers and nuggets.
That's an interesting last point, novelty. And, you know, we did a show a few episodes back with two founders of two alternative protein companies. One was plant-based and one was lab-grown seafood. One was plant-based dairy meat and dairy replacement. The other one was lab-grown seafood. And my question to them, and it sounds like this is what you're referring to, Mary, is at what point will companies start to innovate just simply new products, new protein products or food products or, you know, breakfast, dinner, lunch, cereal products that aren't a plant-based copy of something animal?
I think that that's a great point. We're probably not there yet. I think right now the focus is on coming up with diverse types of proteins and then kind of stepping up the game in terms of the consumer experience, because the target audience right now in terms of the consumer are those flexitarians that grew up on animal-based products. So they're used to that experience that they've learned from an early age with meat and dairy. I think ultimately the next phase of development will be in coming up with alternatives that are not just copies of meat and of animal products, different product forms, plant as center of plate, not as a replica. I think that's probably a little bit beyond 2022, but that'll be the next wave of development.
It's an interesting idea. It's also, I wonder, and I've asked this question to many guests, and Jasmine, I'll throw it out to you and Mary and Dina as well, just generally as an idea. You know, there are so many plant-based cuisines in the world today, right now, where you could have a beautiful meal every day. You could have a completely vegetarian, vegan menu and lifestyle in Italy or in India or in China. I could open an Italian restaurant in New York City, where I am right now, and it could be entirely vegan. And if I didn't mention that to people, people might not even realize it, because so many, you know, pasta pomodoro, that's vegan. It's always an interesting idea to me that instead of going towards existing, you know, naturally formed ingredients as we find them in the wild, why we need to have a plant-based burger? Why can't we all just, you know, live on pasta pomodoro?
I can take a shot at this one. I love the question, honestly, and I am a big fan of plant-based eating. That's what I adopt myself. Yet, what we see globally is that people actually really crave animal-based products. We always have, and maybe we always will. When I think about the challenge of, you know, particularly urgency around solving for this, we don't have time. We don't have time. I would love for there to be a beautiful pasta restaurant in every corner. We don't have the time. Our environment is screaming for help. The climate crisis is upon us. And, you know, I think about it as being a challenge of scale and efficiency. So, you know, even when you look at producing all row crops, you still have challenges with mass balance and efficiency of producing the highest nutrient density per, you know, unit energy or unit area. As an entrepreneur, I have the perspective of, gosh, what can I do to solve this challenge now? And for us, that means, you know, we can assemble a nimble, motivated team to be able to create solutions for the food industry where we're actually not asking people to change their behavior, which is probably the most difficult thing that you can do. And I think any entrepreneur that thinks that they're going to change behavior globally is up for a real challenge. So what we can do instead is we can challenge ourselves as a company, as a team, to provide technical solutions that we can actually scale so that the choices to eat a more sustainable diet are so easy. And that's how we think about it. It's, you know, addressing it at a global scale and with the sense of urgency that, you know, business solutions are happily able to provide in some instances. And we happen to be in a good spot for that.
And Dina, at Lux Capital, certainly trends start with funding in many cases. You can have a great idea, but if you can't actualize it or articulate it in the world, it may not get very far. From where you sit, what types of things are you investing in now that will come to fruition in 2022? Or what are you looking for to invest in 2022?
Yes. Well, I think one way to answer that question is actually to go back to 2019 when we first invested in Jasmine and Shiru. And I think that really speaks to our thesis around how we think about what can turn into generational companies that can fundamentally improve the world that we live in and advance humanity. You know, with Shiru, there were, you know, certainly there's an impact-oriented mentality. This is something that is going to have a fundamental effect on our daily lives, not in the far future, but currently, presently, we're all living and breathing the effects of climate. And, you know, we believe that addressing food is one of the most effective ways to help reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But from a business model perspective, what was really compelling is, you know, I'd spent a lot of time and still spend a lot of time in healthcare and life sciences. And Shiru's model and you know, Jasmine's original idea, which, you know, is still very much the bread and butter, if you will, of the company, is that there was an opportunity to take advances in machine learning and computational biology and enable large food companies to produce plant-based alternatives to proteins at scale in a way that previously had never been done. But we had seen that done in life sciences, and we had seen that done in healthcare. And I was previously at Google Ventures, otherwise known as GV, where I had seen just how much capital and R&D it took to produce individual proteins for, you know, some of the consumer-focused burger alternatives, for example. So the idea of being able to do that at scale was very compelling. And the idea of being able to do it and partnering with these large global food companies to actually enable them to replace ingredients in the everyday foods that you know, Americans and individuals all over the world eat was very compelling. And so that's what's very exciting. And as I think, you know, ahead to 2022 and beyond, those are the types of really transformative breakthrough technologies applied to everyday life that that we get excited about.
You said something very interesting at the top of your response, and that was you were looking at generational companies. That's not something that we often hear when we're talking about entrepreneurs and innovators. We often hear about people who have an exit strategy or, you know, want to hit a certain mark and then maybe go public and things like that. And future growth and investment sounds very sometimes financially driven or success driven. But being interested in generational companies, I think, is something a little bit different. Could you elaborate on what generational means from the Lux Capital point of view?
Absolutely. You know, as a venture capital fund, we are fundamentally in the business of creating value for our institutional LPs, otherwise known as limited partners, many of whom are some of the most, you know, impactful and philanthropic institutions, educational endowments, hospitals, and so on. So we, you know, we invest in companies that we believe will create, you know, billions of dollars of value, but also in technologies that we believe will advance humanity. And some of these are, you know, taking on advanced manufacturing, supply chain, obviously food with Shiru, healthcare, and so on. So when we think about generational companies, it's not just about, you know, an exit or a return or, you know, a multiple. It's about investing in really transformative solutions that will last for generations, that will enable further innovation, that will serve as platforms that will be historic. And those are the kinds of outcomes we aim for because of the size of our fund. You know, we have 4 billion assets under management. So we are investing in those types of outcomes. And that's what we believed in and we continue to believe in fact, more excited than ever with Jasmine.
That's a really great point of view to hear sometimes when we think about or talk about, you know, venture capital and investing in the stock market. It seems a little mercenary sometimes. And something that's generational, that's to advance humanity, sounds really like something I would want to invest in. We're going to take a quick break right now and find out who is investing in this episode. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. Tech Bytes is pleased to be a part of this network. This is our last show of the year. Help us make sure this isn't the last show ever. Listen to who's sponsoring this episode. And while you're listening, think about maybe becoming a member yourself. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believe comfort food can be just that. Know where your food comes from. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
You are listening to Tech Bytes, the weekly show on the Heritage Radio Network, where we look at the intersection of food and technology. And today we are looking into the future. This is the last episode of 2021, and we are trying to make predictions for 2022. And here's a spoiler alert, the future is plant-based. Maybe you already knew that. I'm talking with Dr. Jasmine Hume, who is the CEO and founder of a company called Shiru. It is a very interesting biotech, food tech company that is making ingredients for this next generation of plant-based foods. If you're interested in taking a look at what they do, you can find them online at Shiru, Shiru.com. Also joining us are two members of the Shiru board. We have Dina Shakir, who is partner at Lux Capital, a very interesting investment group. Also, you can follow them online, luxcapital.com. And lastly, we have Mary Clark, who is senior vice president of Furman, who is one of the largest privately held fragrance flavor company in the world. Is that right, Mary?
That's right. That's Firmenich.
That's amazing. And they are firmenich.com. Making flavors and fragrance, certainly all these new plant-based things, we want them to taste like the animal-based thing that they're replacing. How many flavors does it take to make a burger? Mary?
That's quite a puzzle. I think it's really more than flavor. It's really having an expertise in developing a product from a culinary perspective. So it's a simple question with a complex answer.
Yeah, I think we would probably all be surprised if we sat down and looked at the ingredient list of making some of these plant-based versions of animal-based things that we know. So we're looking at 2022, and certainly, you know, Shiru is looking forward to supporting the trend, you know, you're sort of the trend supporting the trend, if you will. What else do you have coming up for 2022? Are you going to, you're going to be expanding again?
Yes, it feels like it never really stops, honestly, which is a very, very fun ride so far. We are in 2022, we're going to continue to grow our team. We're actually expected to double the size of our team. We're 26 people today at Shiru, so taking that up towards 50 by the end of next year, most likely. And then to support that growth, we're actually going to be moving into a new facility out here in the East Bay, in the San Francisco Bay Area in Alameda. So that happens in the first half of next year. But yeah, it's basically custom built, you know, labs and our first pilot facility, actually, to be able to produce those samples and get them in the hands of our first customers. So lots of expansion, lots of growth, very exciting times for us as a young company.
You were a recipient of an award this year from Women Building the Future by Vegan Women. And I'd love to ask all three of you, it's been a long time since we've done a Women in Tech roundtable on Tech Bites, but it's certainly something that we've discussed in the past. How is it look in 2022 for women in tech right now? Jasmine, you just finished a round of funding, and funding is typically one of the topics women founders talk about very frequently. You were very successful in your last round.
I can give you some perspective there. You know, going to raise the seed round of funding for Shiru, which Lux and Dina led, you know, there was a lot going on in my head, this being the first time that I was doing this. And on top of just, you know, the regular woes or concerns of like, oh gosh, how's my pitch going to go? And what should I emphasize? And what questions are they going to ask? I actually had an additional kind of element to think about, which was I was 8 months pregnant.
That's amazing.
When I closed, Shiru's seed round back in 2019. And I spent a lot of mental energy preparing for what I thought were going to be inevitable questions of like, well, who do you think you are? How can you, you know, have a baby and start a company at the same time? What's your game plan? The interesting thing is those questions actually didn't come. And, you know, it's a very interesting maybe filter that the right investors, the ones who really understood the opportunity and who really believed in what we were building, they jumped in without hesitation. I'll never know if the ones that passed, you know, passed for reasons other than having to do with the company or the vision. But you know what? We got the right investors on board, and we have been really excited to be able to grow the company as quickly and as impactfully as we have. So, you know, I think I can't comment on, you know, historically, this is like my perspective of doing this now, but I would say to women who are, you know, going to go out and fundraise and maybe concerned about these things, try to put it in the back of your head. The other questions are going to be the more important ones.
Dina, what does it look like from your perspective on the investment side? Have things changed? Are people now just really interested in product and founder and people? Are those sort of the stereotypes that we see in the movies and read about in the occasional article gone by the wayside?
I wish that were the case. Unfortunately, there's still quite a bit of work to be done across the board in, you know, in advancing equity on cap tables on the, you know, investor side, as well as on the founder side. I personally have been, you know, very public about my, you know, conviction in underdog and underrepresented founders. And it's not just because it's good for the world, but fundamentally because the data shows that women and people of color, and especially intersectional women, make better founders. They have quicker time to exit. The diverse boards are responsible for companies that generally have better ROI. And there's a proliferation of data around how women-founded companies are outperforming the market. In fact, PitchBook just released last month their all-in report, which documented quite a bit of this. And there's some fascinating statistics. Now, all of that being said, the percentage of dollars, venture dollars, that are going towards women founders and that are written by women check writers is still abominably low. And 2020, the year none of us will ever forget for many reasons, was, despite being a boon year in a lot of ways for venture capital, we actually saw a drop in the number of venture-backed companies started by women, at a 3% drop, even as overall deal value increased 16%. 2021 is looking a little bit better, or we're wrapping up in a few weeks, so I should say, unless there's a big change over the next few weeks, I think 2021 was an improvement. Tens of billions of dollars raised across thousands of deals, shattering the record from 2019, despite the dip in 2020. We've also seen an increase in the number of women partners and principals, check writers. In 2019, that was 12%. In 2021, it's 15.4%. So still nowhere near our representation in the world. So there's lots more work to be done. But the data also shows that when you have diversity on your cap tables, when you have diverse investors coming together, there is a natural symbiosis toward toward founders who are also underrepresented. And for me, Jasmine mentioned that she was pregnant, and not only as a mom of two myself, who started my first job in venture when I was 8 months pregnant. So there was a lot that I can relate to there. But I actually seek out mothers. I experienced this myself. I've experienced it with Jasmine, with two other founders in my portfolio who have also had babies in the last, multiple babies in some cases, in the last 18 to 24 months. Those are the founders I want to back. There is nobody who knows how to prioritize and get things done and be present and just be productive more than a mom. And I'm unapologetic about that. So if other folks are biased, well, more benefit for those of us who believe and who see.
I wonder if men will have a better understanding of the superpowers of women and moms coming out of 2020, having spent more time with moms and their kids because everyone was sheltering in place. I wonder if you did a survey, what the results of that would be. Because oftentimes, if you're not actually in a place seeing something happen, it's hard to imagine what's actually happening. But everybody was together in 2020 in the same space. So it'd be interesting to see if people's thoughts about that have changed or not, given the extraordinary year that we had in 2020. Mary, you have been in the food tech innovation space for a while. What does it look like for women in tech from your point of view?
Well, certainly my perspective is not so much from a startup or an equity perspective, but really more a corporate perspective. And looking at my career and looking at where we are, it's actually a very positive time to be a woman looking for a career in tech and in food tech in particular. I think the outlook is very positive. And this is across all different functions: scientists, engineers, sales, marketing, supply chain finance. And really, I think companies have gotten to the point, whether large or small, they're increasingly looking to add diverse talent at all levels. Perhaps maybe not at the board level yet. I think we have some work to do there. But many companies have proactive programs to attract and develop talented women leaders. And in fact, progress at this on this point is something that's an important topic on the dashboard of company leaders that they're measured against. So I think the times have changed, so to speak, in the corporate world, perhaps not quite yet in equity and startup and at the board level.
Well, those are all positive things. And hopefully, you know, moving forward motion is forward motion. And hopefully that is the direction that we keep on going. We have a few minutes left to the show today. So I'll just go around and ask each of you, what are your top trends and predictions for 2022? And it can be within the context of, you know, the food tech space. It can just be what your personal crystal ball is showing you, given your place in the world, what your gut instinct tells you. Jasmine, what are your top trends for 2022?
Yeah, sure. So I think in terms of the food world, which is what we're talking about today, as I mentioned, plant-based, not going to cease in terms of its growth. We're also going to continue to see consumers being really interested and increasingly informed on what goes into the food that they eat and how it's made. In our particular branch of food tech at Shiru, we also are experiencing a lot of energy and attention being focused towards fermentation and the ability to produce foods leveraging fermentation. So that's something that's very close to what we do and a big part of our story even over the next year. Just reflecting a little bit on what Dina said as well in terms of, you know, thinking about more opportunities to invest in female-founded companies, it resonates with me that, you know, some of the best leaders will actually and are women. We know that leadership qualities like empathy and self-awareness are super critical for success in leadership. And women tend to be pretty self-aware and empathetic individuals, I think, as a whole. So I think that, you know, talking about those things and having that be more of the dialogue hopefully increases the progress towards, you know, leveling the playing field a little bit more.
Mary, what are your top trends for 2022? What do you predict?
I think the pandemic has really changed our outlook. If we take a look at what's going on with consumers and food, I think we're really at a stage of what we can call transformation of the diet. Pandemic conditions have heightened consumer awareness of their healthfulness, and they're looking to step up their intentions to make meaningful change in many categories. I think also looking at the pandemic, our collective experience has emphasized the importance of work-life balance. We've figuratively invited our colleagues into our homes on a daily basis through Zoom, creating, I think, a better understanding of what many families have to juggle that often impacts the woman more. Companies are rethinking the need to be present in the corporate office 5 days a week. And many are moving to a hybrid model. And I think that this is going to help balance family life and ultimately, I think, women's career development as well.
Well, that's good to hear. There are so many articles that I have read online over the past year and a half where they were sort of two similar ideas. One was work-life balance is a lie and not possible. Was a big topic that, you know, you saw over and over again. And the other one was that the pandemic itself was really detrimental to women's professional life and careers, just given the way the balance shifted and the way the work-life balance shifted, as you just mentioned, that it was, you know, women who in the homes who picked up most of the slack and then resulting, you know, some have left jobs or transitioned into different, you know, roles or out of work. So it's good to hear that maybe the with a little bit of hindsight now and understanding that the world is a different place now, sort of adjusting to the actual times that we live in and what we want those values to be. Dina, what are your top trends for 2022?
Yeah, there's quite a few. I mean, I think certainly with regard to, you know, to food, there is, you know, so much about the last few years that has made us rethink a lot of our own personal health, the health of our planet. You know, we saw consumer patterns of consumption change over, you know, the course of the pandemic. And so I do think that there, you know, companies like Shiru that are innovating in this space will benefit from some of those changes. I also think with regard to, you know, categories in healthcare that have traditionally been overlooked, particularly those that, you know, have been highlighted by working from home and by the pandemic, we'll see more investment. Women's health and family health being one of those. Unfortunately, mental health, unfortunately for the world, but I think it's good that there will be more investment in this space where there is still, you know, largely an unmet need, as so many of us, as humanity really, hopefully emerges from this, you know, unprecedented global pandemic. So lots of innovation to come. And then, of course, you know, the public markets have been a bit of a roller coaster. And, you know, who knows what that will mean in terms of private market investing. But I do think, you know, from our perspective, we continue to get excited about companies that are building the picks and shovels, the infrastructure that will power digital transformation, whether that's digital transformation of healthcare, digital transformation of the supply chain and of food, et cetera.
Lots happening, but there always is. And 2022, you know, hopefully it will be a good year. It's not exactly tech and it's not, you know, numbers and research and machine learning, but astrologically 2022 is supposed to be a great year for everybody. So maybe
that's good.
You know, maybe even, you know, having the stars align for us, the luck will help the other side, you know, right brain, left brain working together. Well, that all sounds real positive. And I think one of the reassuring things is having smart, capable, generous, and thoughtful people running businesses and running businesses that move us all forward. You know, oftentimes, and I'm sure all of you have heard this in the startup and innovation space, everyone always says, you know, people don't invest in companies, they invest in people. And it's important to have good people with good ideas running things, even if it's just small little pieces. I want to thank Jasmine Hume, the CEO and founder of Shiru, Dina Shakir, the partner at Lux Capital, and Mary Clark, Senior Vice President of Furman, for coming on the show for our preview into 2022. If you're already nostalgic for 2021, or even nostalgic way back to, I don't know, 2015, there are 252 episodes of Tech Bytes in the archives at heritageradionetwork.org. This is our last show for 2021. Help us make sure it's not the last show ever. Go to heritageradionetwork.org, click the beating heart, and it's not too late to make a donation, in someone's name, to give someone the gift of membership to Heritage Radio. It's the gift that keeps on giving. It'll help us make more radio, and it'll help us make more voices heard, record more stories, and share more information. We are a community. We are a global community. And it's important that we stay together. I'm Jennifer Liuzzi. I'm wishing you and yours the very best for 2021. And I will see you in 2022.
Tech Bytes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Just enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.